Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Jumpin' James Herbert. I actually had someone tweet me yesterday asking what I say in the intro, asking, do you say the Pig Control Podcast? That can't be right. And I clarified that it was the Pick and Troll Podcast. I hate opening stuff, so I don't. So I like to just get through the opening. You know what you clicked anyway. It's not like you're surprised by what's on.
Pig Control.
Yeah.
That's so amazing.
Maybe we should change it to the Pig Control Podcast.
I'm a big fan of that name.
Yeah. I think that has... That could really, like, stretch its wings out and...
Do pigs have wings?
I would assume there's got to be some kind of mutated pig out there with wings.
I hope so.
Yeah. That seems... A winged pig would actually be a great college mascot.
I would totally root for the winged pigs. Imagine if the winged pigs played the UC Santa Cruz Banana Slugs.
Oh, my God. My sister went to UC Santa Cruz.
She was a banana slug?
For like a, I don't even think a year, and I think she, it wasn't for her. But yeah, for like,
okay.
I don't know.
Well, did she have enough time to like buy the sweatshirt that says UC Santa Cruz?
I think she did that like opening day. Well, I guess it's not perfect. Opening day. I guess whatever first orientation, I guess orientation.
Orientation, yeah, that's yeah. The word.
The opening day of college, she went out and bought a sweatshirt for it.
I would wear that even though I didn't go to UC Santa Cruz. I would proudly be a banana slug or a winged pig. Winged pig.
Yeah, like flying death pig or something like that. Like that would be a thing.
That'd be a good nickname for a player. I don't know if any player likes to be known as a pig anymore. Well, there was Anthony Pig Miller back in the day.
Yeah, and I'm sure like I've involuntarily screamed like flying death pig when Big Baby's gone up for a dunk or something. Like I'm not even trying to be mean, I'm just trying to be honest here. I'm sure I've
that's
screamed
not
at
mean
it.
There's no way that
I
that
guarantee
ever
I've screamed that at some point in my life.
Good, I'm glad.
I think we've talked about this before, but you're a tournamenter.
I watch the tournament.
Yeah,
I enjoy the tournament. I don't watch it probably with the same analytical eye as our, you know, CBS Sports college basketball counterparts, but
I enjoy it.
I like the crazy.
I would hope I like that they have a more finishing. Analytical eye than we do.
Yes. My eye is purely entertainment when I watch this. I mean, no, I like watching the prospects and stuff. Like, I got a kick out of D'Angelo Russell. I wish that we had more games of him to watch.
Yeah.
Cause I think that guy is really promising and he's an amazing passer. Like what has stood out to you? Cause like I've watched some, but honestly, I haven't watched as much as I would kind of have liked to because, you know, we sometimes have to watch the NBA because that's our job, even when college basketball is on.
I think what stood out to me is just the number of big men that I'm excited to see, like, try to play in the NBA.
Yeah.
It does really seem like we're kind of restocking the big man shelf here with the upcoming draft or maybe the next two drafts, depending on who declares. But, I mean, Kentucky alone has, like, four or five guys.
They're ridiculous.
That are legit, like, that are will at least try to be NBA big man between, like, Willie Cauley-Stein, who's absurd, Karl Towns, who I think is the best prospect in all of college basketball. We've got, you know, I think they have Dakari Johnson,
yeah,
Marcus Lee, and Trey Lyles. Like, Trey Lyles, I think, will probably have played his way into a lottery pick, and that's just Kentucky.
Probably.
Like, you know, Dakari Johnson's probably the next Daniel Orton. You know, but
sure.
But if three of those guys turn out
well,
to be
well, three of those
good
guys are lottery picks.
Right? Yeah. Nice. If three of those guys turn out to be good players, that's pretty good just from, you know, one roster. And then outside of that, you have, you know, Kaminsky. You have a few other guys that that look like they have chances to be, like, you know, rotation guys in the NBA, if not better. And so I think I'm impressed with the big men. And then I'm with you. Like, I was bummed that D'Angelo Russell didn't last longer in the tournament,
yeah,
just because that guy's worth the price of admission.
He's the coolest player in the tournament.
Yeah, he's so funny. He kind of like it's like watching a thin James Harden.
Yeah,
like he just that's the way he dribbles, the way he attacks. Yeah. He's kind of Harden-esque.
Yeah, I can get with that. Do you think you have to pick a team in terms of like do you have to be Team Towns or Team Okafor? Like,
no, I think you can like either guy. It's I will say this. I think Okafor will be good if he's Al Jefferson. That's a quality pick, obviously. Al Jefferson's an excellent player. Does Al Jefferson get you excited, though? Like, if you say you've got the next 12 years with Al Jefferson.
You think that's a start of something, but
yeah,
it's not
it's
a, like,
but it's not like here's our
franchise player.
Yeah. Right, yeah, that's my question. So, you know, he might end up being better than that, but that's kind of where I am with Jahlil Okafor, where I'm like, I know he's going to be good, you know, franchise-changing star. I'm not sure about that. Whereas with Towns, I look at him, I'm just like, this guy can do everything.
Yeah.
I think he's got a way better offensive game than he's been allowed to show because they just, you know, they don't need to pound the ball into one guy because they have, you know, 11 college all-stars on there, yeah, or whatever they have. And so I think that part of his game has been, you know, peaking through the last month or so. And then with Towns, like, obviously defensively, I think he's just going to be a monster. It helps that Willie Cauley-Stein is next to him, so it allows him to be more aggressive, but I still think he's going to be...
It's such an unfair, like, for one college team to have those two.
I know, it's really... And it's not just that. I mean, they have five of them. They have five, you know, NBA-caliber big men at some point, and to just, like, cycle that through, like, wow. That's impressive. I know no one's talked about how good Kentucky is.
No, absolutely not.
Anywhere, but that's
this is very novel.
One guy I want people to look out for, and he's not like a sleeper by any means. I think he's a projected first round pick in most mock drafts, but I think his name's DeLon Wright. Not Delon.
Yeah,
I think
Darrell's brother.
That guy can play. The Utah point guard. He's a big point guard. He's like 6'4", 6'5". He's fun. He's really fun.
No, I remember I talked to, like, he had, because he plays in like their like runs in the summer and like the Drew League and with all the NBA guys that are from LA. And I asked Amir Johnson about him last year and he was just like, yeah, like that kid is for real. Like he is definitely going to be an NBA player.
Yeah. And he's good.
Yeah. Like I think he probably learned a bit from his brother. Like I remember seeing an interview where Darrell was like, yeah, I should have gone to school. I wasn't ready. I told him to do that kind of thing. And yeah, I think, you know, I haven't seen like all of the tape in the world on him, but whenever I have got a chance to watch him, like he looks like he is a pro for sure.
Yeah, we have a bunch of like there are a bunch of combo guards too that, or I guess they're point guards, but they're just so tall that you think, oh, they can play either position. But there's like, I don't know, I feel like there's like four or five point guards that are like 6'5" in the draft coming up. So big people coming into the NBA. That's my analysis so far. And we'll get to
see. That's what you've learned.
That's what I've learned. There are tall people entering the NBA this year, which is different than most years, I would guess.
Very.
I guess we can figure out which one, you know, which of these prospects will join the Wizards and then just argue with each other and quit when things go poorly.
That is the perfect segue.
Maurice Spates of the Golden State Warriors had a quote. CSN Washington's Ben Standig had Maurice Spates after their win, and they blew out the Wizards by, what, like 30?
They were up by, like, 3 at halftime, and then for the first, like, 11 minutes of the third quarter, the Wizards didn't get a field goal.
Actually, if you
like,
check
the
it
Warriors
out,
just
I think it's on Bullet, yeah, I think it's on Bullets Forever. Jake Whitaker had a really funny post about he just played that third quarter in NBA 2K and subbed Randy Whitman from the legendary team onto the I don't think he made him. I think he just subbed him in. I think he's on a team for like one of the legendary teams, but either made him or didn't. But he subbed him in onto the Wizards roster, and then the entire quarter he just threw full court shots with Randy Whitman just to see if they could do better than the one make, and he tied. He hit one. He was like 1 of 34 or something like that. That's really funny. You should check that out. I think it's Bullets Forever.
That's incredible.
Yeah, but this was... I mean, things were going poorly for the Wizards. They had a little win streak there.
They had a 5-game win streak, and then they got killed by the Kings.
That's not a good loss.
You should not get just, like, routed by the Kings.
Yeah.
Like, they let them just... I think they shot, like, 51% or something, and they got to the line a bunch. I don't have the stats in front of me, but I remember that game was, like, not close. And then I think they had a loss to the... Was it the Clippers? It was like a good team.
Yeah, they got blown out by the Clippers, they got blown out by the Kings, they got blown out by the Warriors.
Yeah, and I mean, sure, like, you don't have to necessarily beat the Clippers and you don't have to beat the Warriors, but it's just the way that they're losing these games. It's kind of, like, demoralizing, and, like, that quote from Spates, I think, like, that's just damning.
Yeah, It's Spates will really say anything. It's great that he said that. We knew if we hit them, if we got a couple of stops, they would start arguing with each other and quit. We went out there with a good mindset in the second half, and we did it.
I love that. I love that he's honest about it. Like, I wrote the story, and I said, like, earlier in the year, he had had a really good game against the Thunder back when Perkins still played for him, and he thanked Perkins for motivating him and said that he always acts like a tough guy, but at the end of the day, his game is terrible. I just thought, like,
and that's when we were in peak Spates at that time, because he was playing out of his mind.
Yeah, the Spates Cowboy was just rolling.
Yeah,
which I mean, he still is fine when he plays. It's just like that rotation now, that because I think back then they might have not even had a healthy David Lee. I don't know, but like sometimes Spates gets DMPs, sometimes Lee gets DMPs, sometimes Azili does. They're just kind of going from game to game. But I think he's still like one of the better scoring role players off the bench. But yeah, like back to the Wizards, like I just think like this the whole second half of the season to be a Wizards fan just has to be just so tough, because the talent is there. The talent, it's not an upper echelon team, but it's not this.
I mean, after a January 19th win over the Sixers, big win, not big in terms of importance, but they just destroyed them. They were 29-13.
Yeah.
And then before that five-game winning streak, they were 35-28. I mean, really just crap the bed. Went 6-15 over that stretch. And then the five-game win streak, you know, saved them a little bit, but now back to a three-game losing streak. And an understandable one. This road trip was not great for them. They went 1-3. They did start out with a win in Utah, but it was a close win. I mean, Utah's a team they should beat. I mean, in theory, they should be better than Utah, and Utah was playing really well at that point. But it was just an ugly game.
Yeah,
I mean, you feel good about it because you walk away with the win, but I don't think you feel good with how you executed in that game and how you played. I mean, it's two very good defensive teams in the second half of the season, you know, just making things gross.
Team shouldn't be that ugly. Like, they have talented players on this team. They have guys that can score, guys that can run. And I think might have been the Simmons Haberstroh podcast. It was some podcast I was listening to lately, and they were talking about D'Antoni, and like, imagine if D'Antoni had that Wizards team and just got to like let John Wall run around. Like,
yeah,
I think maybe Whitman takes a bit too much heat just because it's not like they have this perfect offensive roster with floor spacers everywhere. But I do think that he could give these guys a lot more freedom, and that I don't think we're seeing the best of, say, like we've talked about how Beal can do more than he's doing, and I think Wall has been incredible given the circumstances for the majority of the season, but it just, something is off with that team, and I don't think they're particularly enjoying the style of play. Like, obviously the fans aren't, but I don't think the players really are either.
Yeah,
in the system that they have going right now.
Pre-All-Star break, they were 14th in the league in offense. Not bad. You know, a little above average. That's not terrible. So 14th. Since the All-Star break, they are 27th. Only the Bucks, Sixers, and Knicks are worse offensively.
Like, there's just no excuse for that on that team. Like,
no, not at all.
Like, I realize Beal was out for some of that, and they're not the deepest team in the world. But that team should not, like, you think if you just came down and ran pick and rolls, like, 80% of the time, that you would be better than 27th with the bigs that they have and John Wall with the ball in his hand.
Right, and John Wall with the ball. Like, that just shouldn't happen. You know, I kill Whitman a lot.
this is the thing. Like, I do too.
I think he's a terrible coach, but at the same time, you look at what the front office has put together, I think they're better than what they've shown, especially, you know, the last 30 games. But
they are.
But at the same time, you know, they're not deep. They did extend Randy Whitman just because he got the, you know, he happened to be the coach when they got back to the playoffs. And
I think they extended Whitman because he made the team care about defense and they had a good run.
Yeah, and I'll give him that. I mean, he has, whether it's him or whether it's an assistant, that team is playing very good defense under him. So there's that. It's just, they look clueless on the offensive end. It's John Wall go create something, and that's it.
Yeah. And then I think, like, they just need a stretch four so badly because, yeah, Pierce played that role last year in Brooklyn, but he's not, like, just his size at his age. Like, I don't think you should be asking him to do that every night. And Porter's, you know, he's just too skinny to do that at this point, I think, consistently. And then all their other bigs, like, they're not floor spacers. And they've been looking at this for years, and I think the team has known that they need that for years. And they had Al Harrington doing it last year, and then they didn't bring him back, and he went to China, I think. But like, if they don't get shooting bigs in the off season, I think their fan base is going to have some sort of protest.
Like. Yeah, or just shooters somewhere. They're the fourth worst 3-point shooting team in the league. They don't take all that many, and you can kind of justify that by saying, "Hey, look at their percentage; they're awful. They shoot 31.4% from 3-point range. Like that's really bad." But at the same time, you know, how many of those looks are quality looks? I wonder.
Yeah,
you would think that the Wizards, with John Wall, could create better corner looks, but they're in the bottom. I don't know, they're in the bottom 10 in terms of corner 3-point attempts this year. And, yeah. Or since the All-Star break, they're bottom 10. And just overall, I'm sorry, those 3-point numbers were since the All-Star break. So they're shooting 31% since the All-Star break. So that's a part of the problem. But it is something where there's something wrong with the offense. And maybe I'm just not watching close enough, but it doesn't appear that they're trying anything to fix that. Like, it's kind of just, well, we got what we got. Go run it.
Yeah, and that's sort of the feeling that you, like, seeing some of these post-game quotes, and that's about the offense and the defense. I mean, some of the quotes after the Kings game, like, I think Wall just said he couldn't explain it, like, why they were just so easy to beat that night and so easy to score on. There was, I think it was that game, maybe it was the Clipper game, one of the three recent losses, Whitman got, like, really angry in the post-game presser when he was asked about offense. And he said, it starts with the defense. It's all about the defense. This is our problem. Blah, blah, blah. If anybody else has any questions, they better not be about offense.
I agree that the defense does start it.
I think he sensitive to criticism about the offense because it is not really, I don't know how to put this. It's not really a 2015 NBA offense because of all the things we're talking about. They're not creating open threes. They're not creating corner threes. They don't have the ideal personnel either, and that, like, we have to put the blame on the front office for part of that, but I do think they're leaving something on the table based on the style of play and based on just, you know, honestly, effort level, because that's what Spates was getting at, right? Is like, the Wizards will hang with you for a while, but if they take a punch, they might not necessarily stick with it because they don't, they're just not a solid together team right now.
Right. On the season, they are ninth in 3-point percentage for the entire season, but fourth to last
in attempts.
Yeah. And I think what Spates was talking about was, if you frustrate these guys, they're done. Like, they don't have that mental resolve to pull things together and to kind of handle that smack in the mouth. And I don't know. That's a tricky thing to kind of analyze. I don't know if that's is that a coaching thing? Is that a leadership thing with John Wall? Is that a personnel problem? Is it everything? You know,
without being there and without talking to people, like, it's really hard to know. Like, just from watching them, though, like, it's almost a shame that the trade deadline has passed. Like, it seems like a shakeup would do some good, and I think the Andre Miller for Amon Sessions thing, that didn't change their fortunes.
It blows my mind that Amon Sessions can't help an NBA team. I'm just floored by this.
But yeah, it's weird, because, like, we're killing them, and you look at the standing, and because of the nature of the East, they're still going to have a chance to advance in the first round. Really, as we've talked about, outside of the top two teams, nobody in the East is feeling that great about themselves right now. So, yeah, it's like, what happens if the Wizards put it together enough to win a first-round series against Washington or against Toronto? Does that mean they just come back with the same group? Because that would be a mistake, in my opinion. I think they're going to have to address this situation. Like, I think a lot of people will call for a coaching change regardless of how the rest of the season goes. But even if they don't do that, like, they're going to need some roster turnover. They're going to need some actual shooters on this team, because a spread floor in John Wall is such a weapon, and it's a shame to see it being wasted.
Yeah, it is interesting, like, what can they do with the roster? You know, Nene has one more year after this season. Gortat's locked up. Wall's locked up. You know, Webster's got a contract that's probably not all that movable. Pierce could be a free agent. They still have Beal on a rookie deal. They still have Porter on a rookie deal. I guess Humphrey's deal is tradable, because he can be a he could be a fourth big man for someone, right?
He can be a fourth big man. It's just you also need somebody inside that can spread the floor too.
Yeah.
Because I think their problem was they went and got Humphreys and they got DeJuan Blair, and they have Drew Gooden, and it's just like, well, I mean, Gooden will take a three every once in a while, but that's not a stretch four.
It's just a stretched four.
Yes. And I think the interesting question is, like, do they need both Nene and Gortat? Because that has been kind of their defensive identity, is they have these big guys who are very physical on the inside, and Nene is capable of switching onto smaller players and moving his feet and doing lots of little things for them. But when you have Gortat not playing in the fourth quarter, and when you have an offense that just isn't very spaced, you kind of wonder, like, how far will those two take them if that's your front court? Maybe, even though they're both good players, and I think both may be underrated, I don't know if you really, in today's league, like, if you want to go forward with that.
It's just, I mean, if you're going to go that route, it's got to be the Memphis model, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
the Memphis model, like, you just, they're both on another level.
Oh, sure. I mean, the big men are obviously much better in Memphis, but I think that model, in terms of you establish the defensive identity, that's step one. But then, I mean, you've got to make sure the coach is the right coach for you. Even if he's had success, like Lionel Hollins had success. He gave him their best season in franchise history. They still got rid of him.
The guys still love Lionel Hollins.
Yeah, they still love him.
They're better now.
Right, exactly. They went out and they, you know, and not that Washington wouldn't consider this, but they went out and, you know, Memphis went out and filled out the roster in ways that they needed to get better. And it took some time. It wasn't something they easily did, but, you know, I don't know that you feel great about Washington's drafting. You know, I don't know that you feel great about their ability to acquire and develop young talent. I'm not saying you should shut the book on Otto Porter by any means, but, you know, they've had enough mishaps with this front office or some version of this front office, and it starts at ownership, that I think it's fair to question whether they can add, you know, mid to late first round talent.
Yeah, I'm not sure it'll be easy to rejig this thing in the summer. And, like, I just think they thought they were pretty close last year. Like, the Pierce move after they lost Ariza, I don't think that's a bad move by any stretch. I just think you make that because you want to be good right now, and kind of finding out they're probably not good enough right now.
Yeah, so, and I don't know. I mean, Beal being healthy and getting into the flow could certainly transform this team.
We've seen him play like a star before.
Yeah, but I also think he's horribly misused.
Yeah,
I don't think he's allowed to do enough. And, I mean, I think somebody, maybe it was Lee Ellis on the starters on the drop from either Wednesday or the week before, but he said something to the effect of, Bradley Beal can't take a bad shot. Like, any shot he takes, because of his ability, can make it at least a decent shot. And I agree with that. I think he should be doing more. I think he should be doing more playmaking. I don't think his usage rate is high enough. And it's tricky to balance that with with, you know, John Wall needing the ball in his hands, because John Wall with the ball in his hands is better than most other players in the league with the yeah. you know, holding the rock. But it's still, there's, I think that's the thing. There's not any balance to that attack. And then there's the issue of, you know, Marcin Gortat playing enough in fourth quarters and stuff. You know, there are a lot of seemingly, like, systemic issues that they have to solve and they have to add to the roster. And that's, you know, maybe that's above the current regime.
Maybe. That's why this is going to be just such a huge offseason for them, I think. Because you don't want to, like, you have this backcourt that, this is like the envy of the whole league, right?
Right.
But you have to put those guys in the best position possible, and you have to have guys that really fit around them. And to me, that means you should be running and you should be shooting a lot of threes. And, like, I don't think that's complicated or revolutionary or anything, but it's just not what we've seen there. And I understand that, you know, the traditional view of the NBA is that you can't, you know, push the pace that much, and you can't be this team that is trying to get all these quick buckets and still be a good defensive team, but, like, that's changed now. Like, everybody is seeing what the Warriors are doing.
Well, and to add to that, I've got something coming out tomorrow, so I don't mind talking about it right now, but mm-hmm. I kind of look into the best transition teams in the league, and they do run, or at least they have a high frequency of transition. They are 8th in frequency of transition possessions.
Okay.
So they are up there, and in terms of transition scoring, they're tied for 4th. So when they run, it's brilliant.
No, they're awesome.
And why is that? It's because John Wall can't be stopped in the open court. Like, he's ridiculous. And I think you can add Bradley Beal to that. And I think a guy like Gortat or Nene running down the lane adds to that too. And granted, you can't just run all the time, and there's a difference between being a good transition team and having a high pace, and there, you know, there's a balance there, and they do run a good amount, but I think you look at their strengths on the roster and you think, you guys should be running more. You have a great you have a great defense, you have a great transition offense, and you don't run enough. And that's you know, that's the thing about it. It's like the elements of being good are there. It's just, where's the game plan?
The elements of being good are there. They've beaten good teams. They've had some success in the playoffs. This isn't a total disaster.
Yeah.
But it kind of feels like one right now because of the way that they're losing and the fact that it just always kind of feels like after something good happens, it kind of feels like, okay, when is the other shoe going to drop? Because whether it's a losing streak or whether it's an injury or just a really bad loss or something, it's just after that start of the beginning of the year, it just hasn't really felt like they've had anything sort of sustainable going there.
Yeah, and maybe it is.
We're focusing on that, and you can say that for basically the rest of the East too. So I want to just put that in context. Like, we're not saying this team is, like, awful,
right?
But it's just that there are problems there.
Yeah, I mean, almost always when you kind of are critical of a team, at least from my standpoint, it's well, this team could be better. Like, why aren't they better? Like, it's not a, oh, look how much they suck kind of thing. It's
right. It's
you see potential for this team. It's like they're not maximizing what they've got. And I think that's where the frustration is.
Here's my main beef with this team is that I love watching John Wall play, but when I'm just looking at what's on League Pass on a random night, I'm never like, I really want to watch this Wizards game. Like, that just, I haven't had that thought in months.
There is the nice option of, like, oh, I could watch that game tomorrow and kind of just fast forward through it.
I could just watch John Wall's assists and baskets.
Like. Yeah, I just go to the NBA site and just click on his assists for last night and watch those. Like, I do get that every once in a while. And maybe they'll be fine. Maybe it is just a lull in the season and they'll gear it up over the next 3 weeks and then they'll be fine with the playoffs and they'll make it to the second round or they'll make it to the conference finals or something. I mean, I guess it's possible. I do think there's talent there, but
there's absolutely talent there. And, like, at the end of the game, they have Pierce, Wall, and Beal. Like, they have guys that can make plays for them.
Yeah,
it's just the way that they play. You're kind of just asking guys to step up and make that kind of hero play.
Yeah, I think it's, you can see that they have guys that can do it, but will they be put in a position to do it?
Yeah,
and I think that's a valid question. Speaking of questions, there are all kinds of questions with this the Sacramento Kings and DeMarcus Cousins relationship.
Yes.
How about that for a segue?
I think Michael Lee in the Washington Post had one of the better DeMarcus Cousins stories that we've seen in a while. Got him to be pretty honest about the situation and the year that he's had. And it's nothing that is going to absolutely shock you. Like when DeMarcus Cousins said this year is a complete circus, it's like, yeah, it has been. We've been saying that. It's just, it's something else to hear it from Cousins. And I think, obviously he's just had such a, I mean, players always say it's been up and down, but it's really just been mostly down for the 5 years that he's been in Sacramento.
Yeah, and it's not that it's been bad, it's that it's been chaotic.
Yeah. Yeah, like they've just never had any stability aside from it. It seemed like they were finally building that at the beginning of this season, then that was gone. And, you know, now they have this George Karl thing, and, like, this thing that they're trying to do, it could really work. The problem is they need a training camp to do it, and they're probably going to make some more roster moves. And I think it's just the way that this season developed, it's just hard to really even judge them on the floor right now. And it's really important that he, like, Cousins and Karl end up on the same page at some point. And there has to be a kind of buy-in there. And I think Cousins is kind of the mind that they need to be a good defensive team. And it's not like Karl doesn't want to be a good defensive team, but I think it's just, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Like, you know, if you're 20 games into next season and they're still playing like they are now, because they need to grow, and they need to change things up a little bit. But you can just feel like, I don't want to say, like, it's just, if Cousins was like a free agent now coming up or next year or something, if he hadn't, they don't have him locked up until, I think it's the summer of 2018, they have him locked him up.
Correct.
Locked him up until, like, if that wasn't the case, then this story would read very differently, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's still a lot of people that think that Cousins could be traded this summer. I don't get that, but
I think that's crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I understand the logic to it, but I just think when you have a legit franchise guy like that, like, you do everything within your power to make that work.
Yeah, it would have to take, I mean, it would just have to take a lot more than that Knicks pick. I mean, that's the rumor that keeps being floated out there. It's like, oh, the Knicks could trade their number one pick if they get the number one pick for Cousins. I'm like,
but when I saw that, like, I never saw, like, that was just the example that some people used, like, oh, maybe they can get a superstar, maybe they can get Cousins, but it was never reported that that was actually
right.
Anything close to an option.
Yeah, right. And but I think, like, that's like the kind of mindset of, oh, this could be possible, and it's like, that's.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe if it's Schved in the number one pick, then we're talking here. But
Leto.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh God, you don't trade Ricky Leto for
DeMarcus Cousins.
I know Cousins is a quote unquote all star, but. I guess he's not quote-unquote. I guess he is an actual all-star.
He is definitely an all-star.
Cousins' comments were interesting, though. Just take the ones that you excerpt. It's been a circus, man. It's been a complete circus. We got off to a hot start. Unfortunately, I got sick, so it ruined the look of the team. I take some of the blame for that. I don't think you should have to take the blame for being sick.
Absolutely not.
For getting viral meningitis, I think is what he had. Like,
I let my teammates down.
Yeah. I know for a fact if I wouldn't have gotten sick, things wouldn't have happened the way it happened. There was no way it could. At the same time, a lot of it is not my fault, and we all know why, but this has been a disappointing year. I'm still wondering, how the hell did I get viral meningitis? Where did it come from? I was like, this is going to be bad, and it did get bad, and it was just downhill from there. And then he has really interesting quotes that I kind of feel like they're breathing a little bit, but I could see people just decide to take this as immaturity from him. But it's, I felt like a line was crossed in regards to leaks that Cousins' camp wasn't happy with the George Karl hiring. And says, I felt like a line was crossed. I was trying to figure out how I'm going to deal with it. I've come to the conclusion that I'm in Sacramento. And not to sound arrogant, but what's bigger than my name in Sacramento? It could be a damn forest fire in Sacramento. My name will come up. It was near DeMarcus Cousins' house. And he's right. Like, I'm from...
You know more than the average person about Sacramento.
I'm from Sacramento. I lived there for, I don't know, 85% of my life, or whatever that percentage ends up being.
Do you know anything there bigger than DeMarcus Cousins' name?
I mean, there's a minor league baseball stadium that's kind of nice.
I get, yeah.
I really enjoy going. I spent a lot of summers there.
So if there's a forest fire near that.
Yeah, I'd be, well, me personally, I'd be more concerned about my parents' house, but they also don't live near a forest.
That's so good. I'm glad.
Yeah, so that's, I guess I don't have to worry about that. I mean, that would have to be a serious forest fire to affect their house. But no, like, it's, I guess there's the horrible California government that's there because it's the capital of California. That's maybe the only other thing that's bigger than Sacramento right now, or that's bigger than DeMarcus Cousins in Sacramento right now. Like, he is the future.
So he has a point.
Yeah, he is the future of sports in that town. And he's one of the, I don't know, 10 to 15 best players in the world.
Yeah.
I think we can comfortably say that. And on top of that, he's the most important player that franchise has had since Chris Webber. Because he's good enough to, you know, he's not as good as Chris Webber was when Webber came to the Kings, and he's not as good as Webber ended up being at his peak with the Kings, but he's of that
importance. He could get there.
Yeah, he's of that importance. He could easily, like, not easily, but he could become better than what Webber was. I mean, he has that kind of talent. He has that kind of dominating force. I don't think that would shock anybody if you said, you know, 10 years from now, DeMarcus Cousins was the best player in Sacramento Kings history. I don't think that's a crazy thought.
It's not a crazy thought, and that's what they in Sacramento have to hope for, because the idea is that he'll go from being, you know, one of the best big men in the league to being like a top five player. And if you surround him with the right guys and you run the right system, that this could be something special. And I think it can be. And they're betting on George Karl being that guy. But I mean, there was a story, it was David Aldridge from NBA.com interviewed George Karl, and he asked him about his relationship with Cousins. And he said that was, you know, that was still a work in progress. Like, they're still trying to figure each other out. And Karl acknowledged the agent situation. I think that was awkward at first, because, yeah, I mean, Cousins really didn't want to be looked at as the guy who's trying to, you know, squash Karl coming to town. But I think, he was working with two agents who previously had a relationship with Karl that I don't think either ended well from the reports that came out. So
right.
There was ground to be covered there. We don't know exactly how much that mattered in Sacramento courting Karl and eventually agreeing on a contract with him. But I do think, like any relationship, like between franchise player and coach, it takes time to build that trust, and I don't think it started extremely well there.
Yeah, well, and I mean, it's been 3 weeks, 4 weeks since Karl took.
Since the All Star game.
Yeah, I'm sure they were in contact somewhat with each other around that time, but for the most part, like, 4 weeks in the middle of a season to build a strong relationship with a new coach,
like it's just
that
not
just
realistic.
Doesn't happen. Like, yeah, like there's not enough practice, there's not enough downtime. Like, I just like that's something that takes a while, and so yeah, I think that's reasonable to think. And like you said, if Cousins was going to be a free agent in the next year, these are not dangerous comments, but these are comments that induce some anxiety. Yeah, there's some anxiousness there. Whereas with with him being locked up through 2018, yeah, it's just yeah, these make sense. This is stuff that everyone has to work on. Go get it done.
Yeah, exactly. And I just think I remember when Cousins was talking about this that at the All-Star break, and I mean, we were asking him all these questions about Karl, and he was saying, honestly, I haven't spoken to him yet. Like, that's going to happen soon, but we've all been so busy. This was like a day or two after that. Like, it was agreed to. And he said they're basically going to treat the rest of this season like it's a training camp. Like, and I think that's the only way you can really look at it, is it's kind of like practice for next year. Like, next year is really when you can start to look at what they're building there and if Karl's style is going to work there. This is just sort of, okay, so who fits? How is this going to work? What do we need to tell each player to work on in the summer? Because they're, I mean, for any team that's out of the playoff race, it kind of turns into something like that toward the end of the year. But yeah. I think this is just, it's just so new and it's so different from what they were getting in training camp this year. Like, basically, like, Malone was drilling them on, like, defensive fundamentals, like high school stuff,
yeah.
Trying to get them to be this tough defensive team. And it worked, but that's not the style that the organization wants. And, like, what Carl is going to be doing is just going to be so radically different than that, which is fine. But it just means, like, all that this is really about is let's figure out who gets to stay and let's start slowly building something that might actually be sustainable for once.
Yeah, and this is the ninth coach in 9 seasons for them.
That's insane.
That you just got to have some kind of stability. Hey, speaking of a new coach for a team, Flip Saunders is a newer kind of coach for the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Were you outraged with what he's been doing and what the team has been doing with sitting guys lately?
Oh, I thought you meant with winning. How they won the last two of the last 3 games. Yes, I was outraged at that because I want the number one pick for them. Actually, I don't know if I want the number one. I want whatever is going to cause them to end up with Karl Towns. That's what I want. I don't want any other. I guess like D'Angelo Russell will be fine.
But you want one or two, depending on who has one.
Yeah, I want two. I want two if
Saunders sees those two guys.
Yeah, I want two if the number one pick is definitely Jahlil Okafor.
Yes,
that's what I want.
That makes sense.
But yeah, so they've been sitting a lot of guys. They got into a situation where they signed Sean Kilpatrick from the Delaware 87ers.
Yeah, just because he was close.
Because he was close enough to get to the game. That's the like they got a late injury exception for a 10-day granted by the league, but it was so it was such a tight time frame before the start of the game, I think, against the Knicks.
Yeah, it was the Knicks game.
That they had to say, hey, who's close? Well, Sean Kilpatrick could make it. And he actually, I don't know if he's an NBA player, but he can shoot.
That's an NBA skill.
Yeah, which is something they could use. He had a couple of clutch free throws, I don't know, I think last night or, I don't know. At some point, he hit a couple of clutch free throws.
I think it was last night.
Yeah, and so that's, they have 8 or 9 guys who are injured. Now, they have 8 or 9 guys who are too injured to play. That's the question.
Yeah.
They've been sitting a lot. They have Muhammad and Hummel. Those guys are out for the year. KG is,
KG's
been playing for 20 years.
He's KG.
Yeah, he's been playing for 20 years. I don't mind that. Rubio was back and he was playing okay, and then he started playing poorly, and the ankle has been bothering him, that ankle that caused him to miss 40-plus games in the middle of the season. So that one, I feel like he could probably play, but I also, why push it? This team sucks.
Exactly.
They're not playing for anything, so I don't mind that. And you get Zach LaVine point guard minutes. I don't think he's a point guard. I don't think he will be a point guard. I kind of look at it from the same sense of the Orlando Magic played Victor Oladipo at point guard as a rookie.
And he played Dwayne Wade as a point guard.
Yeah, and not that Zach LaVine's going to be as good as those guys, but I don't mind that opening season of, hey, try this new skill. Or newer, like, maybe unconventional skill for you. Go try that role and let's see how you do and see if you can learn anything from it and apply it to the rest of your career. I don't mind that. Now, if they try to make him the backup point guard next year, I won't be too crazy about that. But, whatever. Like, he gets a little bit more time on the court and he gets to try some things out. He hit two ridiculous threes last night to send it into overtime. They eventually won. So that's a cool experience for him. I don't mind that. But they do have. But I mean, they missed. They only played 7 guys last night for almost all the second half, I think, and the entire overtime period. They played Chase Budinger as a power forward against Derek Favors, and it worked.
How did they win?
Well, Trey Burke didn't shoot so well, and he didn't seem to recognize that a 6'6", shooting guard small forward was defending Derek Favors. He didn't. I don't know if Derek Favors got the ball once in overtime. In a position where he could do something.
Yeah.
That was just baffling. But so the Utah Jazz broadcast team, I guess they said Flip was tanking. He was intentionally sitting players out.
Yeah, do and better they, than they started odds. Saying this is bad for the league. People paid money to show up, and they should get to see Kevin Garnett play. And
I mean, KG can't play.
I will say I didn't pay money, but I went to see the Wolves a week ago, and I was pretty disappointed that I didn't get to see KG.
Yeah.
But at the same time, even though I was disappointed I didn't get to see him,
you understood.
I just don't think you can put any blame on the Wolves at all for that. Like,
yeah, for, I mean, have, for the KG part, like, come on.
Like, if you have a 38-year-old guy with a nagging injury, why in the world would you force him to play a game that has absolutely no impact on, like, where the team is going to be this season? You have young bigs. Let Gorgui Dieng play. Yeah, let like, Adrian like, Payne play.
Yeah, they're like 40 games under 500 or something. Yeah. I mean, there's just no need. And then Flip got mad. He was told of the comment, said that's totally irresponsible. We're not tanking games.
I believe Jerry Zagota said he was livid.
Yeah, which I can imagine Flip would be. If that's so, then the Jazz got beat by a team who was tanking. We're playing to win. Our guys are out there. We won two games ago at New York. We lost in the fourth quarter against Charlotte last night. We're not tanking games. It's irresponsible for them to go on TV saying that. If you work at ESPN, you get fired for saying stuff like that. I don't really agree with that. I don't think that that's true. Because I think they've openly talked about we got to end tanking. These teams are tanking.
Yes. And Flip has worked at ESPN. So
yeah, I think that's why. Maybe Flip was under different orders. I don't know. but I mean, look, I think that I'm not on the medical staff. I'm not on the coaching staff. I do
You're
think
not?
I just handled the Kevin Love trade. That was my job.
Okay. Well,
but
you did really well.
I didn't do bad. I thought I handled it well. There are probably some guys who could give it a go. I would assume. I also think. I mean, I have a much bigger problem with Andrew Wiggins playing 48 minutes in an overtime game.
I was gonna say
than I do with Rubio sitting out or nine guys sitting out last night. Like that's the problem I have. I don't think. I mean, well, no. He does want to play Wiggins as much as possible, and he's kind of turned into Tom Thibodeau with Wiggins in that sense because he's playing him a lot of minutes right now, which is. Could be okay. It could be dangerous.
Okay, so when the Wolves were in Toronto, Wiggins was asked about the grind of the season, and he said this is the time when you're starting to feel it, when your body's sore and whatever. And then they played the Knicks game, and he was asked about the rookie wall, and he said he thinks he's starting to kind of hit it now. And so there's all that, and then he just keeps playing like 40 some minutes, and then they get to an overtime game, and they just leave him out there for basically the whole thing. I'm just thinking, like, are you really trying to run him into the ground? Like, I know Wiggins' goal is to play 82 games this season. And like, okay, cool. Let him play 82 games, but don't make him play 82 games of, like, 40 minutes a game.
Right. I mean, where is it? He's played the fifth most minutes in the league this season.
That's insane to go from a college schedule
doing that. And again, maybe he'll be fine.
We don't know how much they're pushing these guys in practice or anything. Like, I doubt that they're being pushed too hard when they have, like, seven or eight guys available.
Right.
Like, I imagine their off days are pretty much nothing. But still, like, that's just a ton of minutes for a dude that's just out of 1 year of college.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he'll be fine and maybe... Maybe he's heading down a road of destruction. I'm not quite sure. I mean, with the injuries lately, it's a little more understandable.
Right, because somebody has to play.
Yeah, I mean, I would hope that he would be able to tell Flip that, hey, I'm exhausted. Like, I need to cut. Yeah, but he's, I don't know, maybe he's the competitor that doesn't want to show weakness or, I don't know. But that stuff, maybe, I guess it also, you could think about it of, it shouldn't be up to him. He shouldn't
That's
have to
my
be
thing.
In that,
like,
in that
the
position.
The team should be protecting him, yeah.
Right. So, that's a fun situation.
I'm seeing for the Lakers Wolves game, which is another important tanking game, if indeed they are tanking. Kevin Martin and Justin Hamilton are both questionable. Okay. Garnett, Rubio, and Neal are doubtful. And Bennett, Hummel, and obviously Hummel and Shabazz and Pekovic are all out.
Right.
So, same story. Honestly, my thing, like, the Flip comments, it's almost attacking a straw man to me because nobody, like, at this point in the tanking discussion that has been, like, exhausted to this point, Nobody is saying that when they actually go out to play that they're trying to lose. There's nobody who actually thinks that the coach is telling them to miss shots or the players are deliberately not trying. Like, obviously, when they go out there, they're going to play as hard as they can, and there's nobody in the locker room that's going to be bummed out that they beat the Jazz. Like, that's not what the Jazz announcers were saying in defense of them. Like, they're saying that it's gotten to the point where teams will be extra cautious and with injuries, and will basically say if there's any sort of reason to sit somebody, like, they'll just do it because they don't really care about winning it anyway. And I understand people being disappointed by that, like, when you go to a game to see a specific player, but to me, with the way the incentives are, like, I just can't get myself worked up about that.
No.
I just can't.
And I mean, for me, I hope they tank. I hope they tank and get the best pick possible. That's what
I... Because you were, like, yeah, like, actual fans of the team are, like...
I have no problem with tanking under the current system. It's set up to where tanking is rewarded, or potentially rewarded, I guess.
Sixers fans were so happy when the Lakers beat them.
Yeah. I think long-term perspective, and I don't know if the Timberwolves actually have this, but you would hope they do. But for me, long-term perspective is always more important than the impulse of now. And
definitely.
And great, they won two out of the last three games. Well, if that ends up costing them, and there's no way of knowing, but, like, if that ends up costing them the best pick possible in this year's draft, well, then that's stupid. Because what did that get you? You know, like, I not hey, go 082 and hope you get the number one pick. Like, I'm all for finding that balance between developing a culture. And actually, the way the Sixers have done it this year, last year I thought it was a joke. This year, I like what they've done. They have established a defensive mindset. They're a good defensive team. They're clearly developing players. I saw some of it up close. You know, I love what they've done. I respect what they've done.
Me too.
Because it's not just go out and lose. They are actually developing players. So in that respect, like, there is a correct way to do it in my opinion, and if teams execute that plan, you're running a risk of not making much money or any money because no one wants to go see your crappy team.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with
the business taking that risk.
Yeah, here's one tanking question that kind of interests me. On Tuesday, April 7th. The Warriors are going to play the Pelicans.
Ooh.
Obviously, I mean, maybe this isn't even the case anymore now that the Thunder are so banged up. But generally, you would think that the Warriors would rather see the Pelicans in the playoffs than the Oklahoma City Thunder. Do you think negatively about Steve Kerr and the Warriors at all if they just decide, you know, we're just going to rest our starters tonight
on
April 7th?
No, you should put yourself in the best position to win a championship. The goal is to win a championship. I'm not saying you throw a game, but if you decide to rest guys, you're still asking, you know, Justin Holiday and Sean Livingston and Andre Iguodala or whatever. You're still asking those guys to go out and play their ass off and play the right way. And if you end up winning that game, great. If not, you're willing to take that risk because if that extra rest helps contribute to a championship, who gives a damn if you didn't put out your best lineup that night?
Because, like, some people would say this is angering the basketball gods and this is bad karma.
No, basketball gods don't exist. If basketball gods
exist,
I am a basketball atheist. If basketball gods existed, Ricky Davis would still be playing. You telling me they gave their only son and sacrificed his career so that he could not play right now? Please.
I agree. And Jerome Randall would have been the NBA years ago and stuck there.
Exactly. Is Jerome Randall your Ricky Davis?
I think so. I think that's safe to say.
Yeah. And by that, I mean the greatest player you've ever seen and anybody will ever see.
I've never seen a better point guard than Jerome Randall.
Yeah, I can't argue with that, except for the times where Ricky Davis played point guard. let's preview games tonight.
Let's do that.
Not a deep schedule. Six games on the schedule. Toronto Raptors at the Detroit Pistons. The Raptors are 2.5-point favorites. I don't know what to make of this Pistons team, so I'll take the Raptors.
I don't know what to make of either of these teams.
Oh, yeah, I guess that's a good point.
This is, an interesting game. Like, the Pistons need any win they can get if they're, they're still sort of vaguely holding on to playoff hopes, right?
Are they?
It's very unlikely. I mean,
technically they're not eliminated. They're five back of Boston.
Five back of Boston. Yeah, I guess there's not even really.
They're five back with what? They've got 12 to play? I mean.
Yeah, they're pretty much dead.
It probably could happen, but.
Yeah. I think the line is too. That's too small for me. Like, I think I'm taking the Pistons here.
Ooh.
I just don't. I don't know about this Raptors team, man. Like, they should win. They should. But I don't know if it's just hard. Like, I've just watched them beat these bad teams and you know, even lose to some bad teams. And there's just no sense of consistency around this team at all. So, yeah, they should take care of business. If they won by 15, it wouldn't surprise me. But I don't think I can just predict that they'll do that. I think the Pistons kind of know how to exploit the Raptors defensively. They've done it before this season, so I think it'll probably be close.
The Miami Heat are at the Milwaukee Bucks. This has potential playoff implications for the sixth seed. If the Bucks win this game,
really
they won't lock up the sixth seed, but they'll have a 3-1 series lead for the season, so they'll have the tiebreaker. They'll be 2.5 games up instead of a half game up. The Miami Heat are 1.5-point favorites. I like the Heat here. Just the Bucks are just in a bad place right now. They turn the ball over more than anybody since the trade deadline. They're one of the worst shooting teams in the league since the trade deadline, one of the worst offenses in the league. And the Heat are like 11th in offense since the trade for Dragic, 8th in defense, and like 14th in pace. Like, they've dramatically changed the way they play.
There is no logical reason to take the Bucks, but I'm going to take the Bucks.
I think something wacky
is going to happen.
Is that the book you're writing? There's no logical reason to take the Bucks, but I'm taking the Bucks.
That will be the book on this Bucks season. I realize that the offense has completely fallen apart since the deadline, and they're losing all the time. This is just like a huge matchup for them, and obviously Miami really wants this too. But the NBA is just so strange. Like, I can't disagree with anything that you said.
Yeah, you could. I mean, you could totally see the Bucks just randomly dominating the Heat in this game. And
I think the Bucks, yeah, like the Bucks are due to do something well.
They're definitely due to do something well. That's for sure. The Lakers are at the Thunder. Thunder are 10.5-point favorites.
Yeah, I'm not gonna keep picking the underdog anymore.
Okay, you're going Thunder.
I'm done with that. Yeah, done with
this?
The underdogs.
I'm going with the Lakers to cover.
Oh wow,
Thunder win, but I'll go Lakers to cover, and I will regret this as soon as tip off.
I like that
happens.
We're disagreeing on absolutely everything so far. Okay, cool.
TNT game: the San Antonio Spurs are at the Dallas Mavericks. Spurs are 3.5-point favorites. The Spurs are just—they're too good right now. I can't go. I think Dallas is better than they've played. And I think you and I talked about that. Maybe Matt and I talked about Dallas, but
I think you guys talked about them most recently.
I'll take the Spurs in this matchup.
I'll take them too. What did you think of this Monte thing is a bit overblown, right?
Yeah, I think most things that become headlines are overblown.
Like, he's had some bad games, and like, if indeed he is sulking, that's bad. But I think he's just the kind of guy that doesn't do himself any favors with the media at all, because if he has a bad game, he just walks out. And
right.
If you don't answer for yourself, if you don't explain yourself, then if you're covering the team, there's only so much you can do, because you kind of just, like, it just doesn't look good. And his play on the court, like, if you're missing all those shots, and he's been in a slump for a while now, those stories are just going to happen.
Yeah, I just, you know, yeah, guys go through bad moments with their attitude during a season, especially when you're struggling. That, unless he starts, like, swinging at guys, I don't know, it doesn't do much for me.
Yeah, that's kind of the way I see it. Like, it's a thing, but it's not that much of a thing, and if they get on a 3 or 4-game win streak, then everything will be peachy again, but I don't think that's starting against San Antonio.
Yeah, probably not. The Sacramento Kings are hosting the Philadelphia 76ers. Kings are 8.5-point favorites. That's crazy to me.
That's too much.
Give me the Sixers.
Yeah, just give me this. Give me all of the Sixers.
Just give them to you. Let them be your team.
Yeah.
And then the last game, maybe the game of the night, the Golden State Warriors are at the Portland Trailblazers.
This is a good, like, TNT
yeah.
thing
well,
happening tonight.
They've had good schedules before and just crap games, so I'm not convinced that this TNT slate of games is going to be great, but
it's promising.
It is promising, absolutely promising. Warriors are 6.5-point favorites. I guess Klay is playing.
I think so.
We're assuming he's playing.
I think he's supposed to be in the lineup. Yeah.
Yeah. Give me the Portland's. Portland's in a spot where, you know, they're banged up. Past the Wes Matthews injury. I think Batum's hurt. Aldridge is having pain in his hand. It's hard for me to trust them against a team like the Warriors, even at home.
So, I don't trust them, but I will optimistically take them and hope that this is some double overtime classic.
Ooh, Lillard time.
Lillard time.
All right. Well, that's going to do it. James, we can follow you on Twitter at OutsideTheNBA. Leave a 4 or 5 star review on the iTunes and subscribe. Subscribe to whatever feed that you're listening to this to and downloading from. And James, I will talk to you later.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for podcasting.